everybody. Welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience once again. I'm Jacob from Team Gary, and today we have our second most listened to podcast of 2022 for you. We're doing this throwback series for this entire week leading up to the new year. We really hope you enjoy these episodes. If you did, please tweet Gary at Gary V. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure you comment down below your thoughts on this episode. Join the Discord to stay up to date on all things V Friends, and we'll see you in the new year.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
We are fucking back. January 20th, 2022. A show that I enjoyed so much during COVID is now back. Tea with Gary V. It is awesome to see all of you. Will Jackson, I see you. Brian Lopez, I see you in the comments. Katie Schaefer, great to see you. Realtor Chris Webb is in the building. DeAndre George, Josiah on Facebook. Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. We have our guest. Dustin, get in here. I need to feel your over-the-top massive energy. You're still sitting in the same place.
Yep.
You're just sitting in the same place.
Yep. I don't change a lot.
I can see that. We're still, blow everyone's face off. Ready? How old are you?
37.
That is fucking crazy.
Yeah. I don't believe it either myself sometimes.
Because you look 23?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, we are back. Tea with Gary V. Are you excited about this?
Very much. Sorry, I have a weird echo going on.
Yes, here. I heard that. I like it. It brings some flavor to the table. Anyway, this is the show where we just do some Q&A with people live. And I enjoy it. Ask Gary V show's back. That is not live. Tea with Gary V is back. That is live. And it's fun time. So let's get some peeps. Let's get some peeps.
Hey.
Hey, Rob.
How's it going, Gary?
It's going
well. I'm doing so good. Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. It's thanks for having me. If you probably remember, because you always remember everything, I was with you at 4Ds in 2019, fall of 2019. We were ready as a family. We was like, all right, we're ready. Blank slate. You said you're an amazing opportunity. Pandemic hit. We kind of went half in. And so we kind of got out of Canada. We got down to Michigan. We realized that still wasn't what we wanted. And so March of 2021, we decided let's go all in. So we played out the thesis. We sold the house. We moved down south. We're renting. Went all in on TikTok. All in on TikTok. Like so many people have heard before, it started going really well for us. Because when we moved down here, I didn't have a job. So we're like, maybe we can push into this. And so it went really well. And then Instagram started building on the back of that. And just recently, YouTube's building on the back of that. So since March 21, we're at like 800 million views. Almost, I think, over 700,000 on TikTok. Now, Instagram and YouTube are just getting rolling now, but they're almost both at 90,000 each for followers, subscribers. So, and it's been amazing. Like it's been amazing for us as a family. It's opened up some opportunities. Right now, it's a very nice little side hustle, but we're really enjoying it. And I think for as a family where we want to go. So now we're not just, as you preach, get in it, you know, get in it, get in it. And you've been saying this for years. But now we're, you know, 800 million views, not even a year in, we think that, okay, this can go from a nice little hobby to maybe we can actually make this into something more. And so would the strategy change much? And of course, I know you keep putting in the work. I mean, of course, I know you're going to say that and be patient, of course, but I want to be smart as well. So as we keep doing the work as a small to medium sized creator influencer, how can we be smart so that in the next 6 months, to the next year, we can keep building on this and possibly making a career out of it?
Look, I mean, I think the reality is it comes down to only two things. One, continue to put out meaningful content in as many places as possible. Two, try to get major brands to sponsor early and lock you in. So going from a side hustle to something more meaningful comes with the foundation of like, can we get the finances that allow us to get there, right? Mm-hmm. Can, you know, and one of the ways to do that is to go to a Nike or Pepsi or, you know, any Walmart, any large business, or not even one of those top five, but even a top 5,000 company, and say, look, you should sponsor our family's content, right? And sponsorship comes in the form of like actually being able to extract bigger dollars, maybe even before you own them. Mm-hmm. Meaning even before you're there, somebody could decide to give you $500,000 to buy, you know, especially as a family content play, like Best Buy might just be in the mood to write you a bigger check, you know? And so I think that there's two ways to go about this. One, business develop and try to get macro sponsorship deals that allow you the finances that you allude to by going all in. And the other part is the mundane. It is, you know, why I've lost some weight here in the first 3 weeks of the year. If you do the right things, you know, it will work out. And the longer you do them, the longer they work out. And the more you pump out content on YouTube Shorts and TikTok and Instagram, and do you start a podcast? Do you do an interactive show like I'm doing right now? Do you build a Discord to put your community in there and interact more? It is really just the blocking and tackling that is required to build something meaningful. Reading all the comments right now from all the, you know, people on YouTube and LinkedIn and Facebook right now, you know, and definitely because I've been in NFT land, I'm just flabbergasted by people's absurd interest in things happening immediately. So many people are about to lose so much money in NFT land, not because of anything else, but their own short-term greed and want to make a quick buck.
Yeah, so at the four D's, the strategy was 7,000, 8,000 messages on LinkedIn. So same thing. Same thing.
Connect with as many CMOs that you think, chief marketing officers that you think make sense, that would be interested in your family, and like, you know, which businesses benefit by having products or associations with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it comes up with your talk with the CMO of Gatorade today, we're available.
I love you, brother. I'm going to try to get to a bunch of them today.
Okay. One more quick. Wow. Can I play wild card real quick? So because, and I'll make it real quick. When I was with you, my 15-year-old was 6'11". Now he's 17, 7'1". And so I know a lot of people are watching this. We're down in the South. He's starting to get on the radar because we came from Canada. No one knew who he is. And of course, I'm his dad. He's a special kid. He's starting to get some college interest.
What's his Instagram?
So if you go to thattallfamily.com, then you'll be able to pull everything else. There's a video of Carter on there. If you watch that video, you can get to us, and all of his links are on there as well.
That Tall Family, if you're recruiting a 7'1 beast. Thanks, Rob. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
I love the wild card. Dustin, you knew Rob was smart there, right? He knew he was going to get me with that Uno. I'm trying to get to more, but he got me.
Yeah.
He got me. All right. Let's keep it moving.
Going to bring on Jason next.
Jason. Hey, Gary.
Good to see you.
Very well. Thank you. Thanks very much for having me on. Thanks, team. Hey, just quickly, Gary, my wife and I run our own fitness studio. And I suppose this time of year, we see a lot of people beginning their own fitness and health journey. And I wanted to speak to you about yours and see what are your biggest day-to-day changes that you notice in your life now, as opposed to when maybe it wasn't a priority for you, you know, 5, 10, whatever years ago.
Yeah, I'm 46 now. I started at 38 and a half. I always make that joke of how I was going to start at 40, then 39. I was like, fuck it, start now. So I'm, you know, I'm almost 8 and a half years in. For me, it was soft tissue, Jason. It was flexibility. You know, my left side was broken because of the liquor store as a kid. I tweaked something and, you know, my QL was so tight that it would completely, really was a struggle. And, you know, I think besides the visual of being more chiseled and having more muscle and, you know, those kind of things, you know, I think that it was really just quality of life around flexibility for me. Yep. you know, I sleep as well then and now, you know, my energy levels are the same. Like there's no, you know, there's people go through different things. They all, we all have, you know, Derek in here just says, Gary, you act like you have the answers to life. He's trolling and being razzing me. And I'm like, I really don't. I just talk about the things I believe in. And I know, I actually think the reverse. I don't think I know anything or am special or any better than anybody. And I think that's what comes down to like a lot of the physical stuff, right? Like every one of us has something different, right? For me, it was absolutely flexibility. You're catching me in an ironic time. I'd stayed in within a range of 10 or 12 pounds that I wanted to for a long, long, long time, right? Yep. And I kind of have always strategically in October, November been focused on getting myself a little tight because I know that, you know, the holidays are a challenge with my birthday, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas time. This year I wasn't able to get there. And what that meant was I kind of went to a number that I didn't want to be at, you know, which, you know, oversharing, I got to 182 in the first.
Do you obsess about the number though? Is that something?
No, I don't at all, but I know what it means. It means like, and so in 20 days of this year, I'm down to 166 because I haven't been eating. I've been and I don't, again, in the same way that I'm not devastated about the weights because there's water weight. There's a million things in that number that matters. Right. Same with when it goes in the reverse. Yep. I'm just calorie depleting because I like fasting and I sometimes just get into momentum and it's kind of fun. I've had really strong workouts and I know that I'm not putting enough protein into it myself in a 3-week window to, let's say, maximize the work I just put in. And I'm not over upset about that either. I just decided in, you know, these 3 weeks, I'd like to really kill the momentum that, you know, it's that slow 2-3, you know, you could feel yourself. And I was like, so, you know, the biggest thing for my journey is education. Even the way you just asked that, I'm aware that a lot of it's water weight. I know that when because I work out 7 days a week, but I really don't go like one, you know, two of those days are a cardio or a lot of it is soft tissue work. You know, it's the way I order food or when I substitute things or is it tea instead of coffee with oat milk? Like it's the education of knowing how to take care of myself, which is almost like the physical version of what I try to teach people in business, which is as long as you're educated how to use TikTok, as long as you're educated that yes, there's a big NFT movement, but 99% are going to fail because they're all bullshit. Like, you know, it's education. You know, I may not love the modern school system, but I believe in education more than anything.
Kayla's just said intermittent fasting. It's just another way to reduce your calories, Kayla. So don't be caught in those fads. There's so many fads out there and the fitness.
Yeah, there's a million.
Jason, you have to
know your body, right? For me,
correct.
For me, fasting has been a part of my life my whole life.
Yep.
Like my whole life. I didn't even know what it was called fasting. I was like, I just would talk to my mom and dad.
They'll put a buzzword on it.
Yeah, I was like, cool. I didn't eat today because I wasn't because I didn't want to, you know. So anyway, nonetheless, thank you, my friend.
Thank you. All right. Cheers.
Have a great day. Cheers. Cheers.
Next, we're going to bring on Tatiana.
Tatiana.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm very well, Tatiana. How are you?
Well, I'm super grateful. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. It means a lot. My heart is like boom, boom, boom right now.
You're very sweet.
I want to say I'm from Peru, and right now I'm in a small city called Trujillo, and it's fantastic because your book right here is in Peru right now. And that's my question for today. I'm a virtual educator, and when COVID came, you told everyone, create an account on TikTok and make content. So I did that. And then I was loose, like I didn't know what can be the next step in my professional career. And I discovered creating content that I really love learning and teaching other people. And then I decided to study for a master in virtual education. Because I also discovered that, hey, everyone will be study online, not physical. And right now in my small city here in Peru, I see all the time academies or universities, college are empty, and yes, everyone is study online. So my yes question is, as a virtual educator, what is the best approach I should take to innovate in education in Web3? Because then you told us what I remembered, like if it were yesterday, you told what is an NFT and why I'm buying these NFTs. And I also have here my iPad because I love digital drawing, and I create some gifts like Passion Panda gifts and Helpful Ipo gifts. You use sometimes that gifts also on Twitter.
Yes.
And well, it's my passion too. So you always teach us in your book to combine traits.
Yes.
And I want to combine education with NFTs and Web3. So that's my question.
One of the things you can do is you can start an education course where after the people complete the course, they get an NFT. It's their diploma. You can go and find some emerging artists to design these diplomas. Somebody might pay for a course, but when they're done, they get a diploma from an emerging artist, and then maybe 4 years later, and it doesn't have to actually be the diploma, it's just a piece of NFT as like a diploma, but it's a piece of art, a collectible. One of those artists, a young lady from Peru, a guy from Britain, you know, a guy from Nigeria, that person may go on to become famous or somewhat famous. So now all of a sudden somebody pays $500, $1,000 for a course, they get their education, they're given a diploma, but instead of a piece of paper or an internet email receipt, they get a NFT. You, as the person at the top, spend a lot of time trying to find some emerging artists that you really believe in, but they're still emerging, so for a very low cost, they make this art. 17 years later, that person becomes Beeple or Xcopy or the founder of World of Women, and all of a sudden, this person says, wait a minute, my diploma's worth $4,000? What's going on here? I don't think people understand how many things are gonna be happening with NFTs. I just made that up on the spot for you. That is an actually strong idea. I think receipts, diplomas, affirmations that come in email form or paper form today can be flipped on their head, innovated on, and created as nice pieces of collectible arts that support emerging artists. So as the organization now, not only are you giving your student something that maybe, not likely, but maybe has some value in the future, but on the flip side, you also give the artist the royalties or split the royalties with them. So now you sold the course for $100, $1,000, $1,000,000, whatever it is, but now you're 50-50 partners with the artist on the royalties. That artist goes on to have a good career, and that person sells their diploma for $3,000. You know, all of a sudden, if you put a 10% royalty on that, you and the artist just got $150 in Ethereum or Solana or wherever you put it on. There's a lot more coming with NFTs. Right now, everyone is thinking about it a specific way. Adam says, use the NFT to the course. A lot of people are thinking that, right? A lot of people are like, buy this NFT, gives you that. People are seeing that. My conference ticket, other things. People get that. I think it's the innovations, the after the fact. Here's your affirmation that something happened. I'm giving you this. A receipt from an internet company? Who wants that? Doesn't mean anything. But in the form of a potential collectible? Fascinating. And definitely in the form of a diploma? Very fascinating. That's my innovation.
That's great. I will do it. Just
I believe you.
Give me some time and I will show you.
Email me when you do it.
Love the idea.
See you. Bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye.
Next, going to bring on Joseph. This is the one from Twitter that you're like, get this guy on.
Well, I'm excited. I don't remember. I you know, Joseph, you got me excited. Clearly, Joseph, how are you?
Good, good. So I discovered you in 2020, first episode of Tea with Gary Vee. So
just really
a full circle moment.
Yeah.
So much gratitude.
Speaking of which, everybody, if you're on right now, please share the link that you have on Twitter, on Facebook, share on LinkedIn. Let's have some more people discover. This is a great community. I love being a part of it. Go ahead, my friend.
Yeah. So a little bit of a backstory. I started playing music when I was 11. Became obsessed with it, started playing 7-8 hours a day. That passion led me to go to Berklee College of Music, graduated from there. In 2015, I started creating custom music for personal ads, TV. A year later, my music got onto Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Since then, it's been on many networks, ABC, Nickelodeon, CBS, all the three-letter TV networks. I've done music for podcasts for Jeff Morrow from Food Network, so multiple episodes of that. On the side, I teach music privately and I mentor up-and-coming songwriters. So my question for you is, I wanna go more on the offense finding clients for custom music. And I know I need to be more consistent with social media, but if you were me, how would you find new clients that help generate revenue consistently in an industry that's more typically one-off licensing?
By being more consistent with content on social media.
Good answer.
Just the reason I just did that is I want everybody to replay what just happened. If you even, there's something very fascinating about either needing affirmation from somebody that you admire, repeating something to oneself. You know, the fact that you know the answer and you stated it in your question. Hey Gary, and now I know I need to stay consistent with more, right? That moment you and I just had is the single most important moment. Like, I want my team to cut that. I'm gonna put it on Instagram and TikTok. It is the most important moment, my friend. I am wildly simple. I say my stuff, I say it over and over again, but people don't hear it because they don't want to do the thing that I'm saying. It's funny that there was a fitness guy on, right? Like, everybody knows how to get into better shape. It is eat healthy and cleaner, right? And put in work in the gym. Literally, that's it. But we will fucking inject implants into our ass, drink ciders and vinegars, fucking take weird ass pills that we have no idea what the fuck they're about. I say every day right now that 98 to 99% of NFTs are going to zero. Nobody hears it. They're just looking to make $2,000 on a snail with a fucking liquor pipe in its mouth. Like nobody here. Like, I will say it 9,000 times, and when the market does crash, everyone's gonna be like, Gary, and I'm like, I fucking said 99% of this shit's going to zero every fucking day. I have sat here for 15 years saying, if you make content consistently at scale on the platforms that people are paying attention to, for you, YouTube Shorts, TikTok, Instagram, it's just massively important. If you follow what I wrote in the Thank You Economy 100 years ago, if you reply to everybody that's talking about music jingles and music on Twitter and just join the conversation, literally search, you know, music and like jingles and like, you know, whatever, you know, what, you know, your terms to your business, and you just sit there for 2 hours and say, hey, I know something about that. You're using the wrong key, or did it, like, bringing value, not even saying like, hire me, you know. That's why I wrote a book called Jab, 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 Right Hook. Give value. And then say, hey, by the way, I do this for a living. LinkedIn is an incredible place for you. Incredible. I talked about LinkedIn ad nauseam on this platform and have continued to talk about it. How much LinkedIn content are you making? I'll save you time. None. Right?
I post about 3 times a week on LinkedIn. So I need to be posting.
Not bad. No, listen, honestly, I'm happier about that. That's a great number for you. I really thought it was going to be zero, but you know, like, you know, it's kind of like push-ups, like 13 is better than 3. And then the question becomes, what do you post? And for me, it's like, you know, posting things like, here's how I think about providing the most value when I write music for someone, and then a manifesto, which gives me an insight on the other side of Vayner. Look, I run fucking VaynerX. We want to buy music all the time. If I see that in my stream, and this happens to me all the time, if I see that in the stream, I just hit the link and send it to our music rights buyer.
Cool.
This is just very important, right? Like, when you've given me the answer to my question in the question, like you just did, then you fucking know what to do. Find a way to make it more fun for you, so that you can fucking do more of it.
Perfect. Most of the people that I expose to on social media are musicians and songwriters, so they're not typically the clients that I would go to.
Let me teach you something that's gonna help a lot of people here. Thank you for saying that. The way I think about things is making content that the audience that I'm exposed to, that is forwardable to the person I want to get to. Let me give you an example. I put out a lot of content around the mindset of parents really pushing college agenda on kids without really looking at their kid. I make the content specific to knowing the kind of thing that the kid that consumes it would share to their parent. When I make the content, I'm thinking, yes, kid, you're gonna see this, but I'm gonna make it in a way that's gonna make you share it to your parent. That's very different. So the content isn't like, hey kids, parents suck, right? Yeah, no. It's intricate so that it brings value to the parent. I'm making it for the parent, but I'm making it in a way that I know the kid's gonna be the one that sees it and will forward it to the parent, and the content will not make the parents say, fuck this guy, even though usually they do say that because there's such a big ideology of college. I need you to know that, okay, I have music people in front of me, but I'm gonna make this piece of content for them with the thought that they may be the gateway to bring me exposure to who I'm trying to get to.
So valuable, thank you so much.
You see what I'm doing there? It's your, I'll give you an example. VaynerMedia has made content that's trying to reach 60-year-old dads, and we've made TikToks that we know 14-year-old daughters are gonna see and share it with their dad. There's a lot more strategy to the shit I do than people realize. That's an insight to it right there.
That's beautiful. One more question for you, Gary.
Real fast.
Which Vayner company is hiring music composers, and where can I send my credentials?
Send it to gary@vaynermedia.com. I'll take care of it.
I appreciate you. See you at VCon, Gary. Thank you.
Can't wait.
Next, we're going to have Miles.
How's it going, Gary?
Miles, what's good?
It's crazy to be on here. I've been a long-time listener, so really happy to be on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You'll love to hear this first. I was lucky enough to get a koala from the book Games Drop.
Dropped it. Like, you got like,
I got it. Yep,
holy shit.
Yeah.
You got a keynote koala.
Yeah, I'm pumped. It's a bubblegum background, marble frame, but I'm excited. Yeah.
Good one, bro. Did you, yeah. And you've taken note, obviously, of the date on the briefcase and the whole nine.
Yeah, I've taken note. You go through in your head what you think it can be. So I have some theories up there, but I'm excited for all of it.
I'm glad. You're going to hold on to it, or do you need the money?
No, I'm going to hold on to it. I'm lucky enough to be able to do that right now. To your point on like 99% of these NFTs, you know, going to zero or however you say it, I couldn't be right there more in that thinking is that long-term, you gotta find founders and executors that can actually build out stuff.
Every internet stock in 98, 99, and 2000 was overpriced, but sitting there was Jeff Bezos and he got hammered. His fucking stock got destroyed in that. But he sat there and he's like, cool, I'm just gonna keep navigating. And same for me, right? Like if all VFriends, and I think there will be, but I've been wrong many times. If there's an NFT crash overall, it's a correction.
Yeah.
You know, it's a correction. It's not a elimination. Right. You know, and VFriends go down. I'm just sitting there like, okay, it's time to like, you know, I've been here before. Yeah. 9/11 took crushed Wine Library. 9/11, all our business was Wall Street. 9/11 crushed Wine Library. 2008 economic crash. We had tens of millions of dollars on wine pre-sales. Lehman Brothers crashes. We get 8 trillion cancellations. It crushed us. It crushed us. COVID. Like, I fucking have been here. Like, I've done this shit. And so I know how to get through dog shit. And there are a small percentage of operators that know.
Well, I think that's the main concern is you see all these NFT projects, not to get caught up on this because I have a separate question, but you see these projects and you wonder, well, who are the people that are leading this thing and what is the value that they're going to provide long term?
And by the way, that happens in startup land all the time. Yeah. I pass on most startup pitches I look at, right? Mm-hmm. And 99% of the time, those companies go out of business. The people that lose money in that scenario are the investors.
Yeah.
What I'm worried about is the people that are going to lose money this time are the buyers of these NFTs. And I don't think a lot of them understand how high risk this all is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll get into my question. I'd like to give a little bit of context first. So my brother and I own and operate a small manufacturing company in New Orleans called Boil Boss. Currently, we have two niche consumer products. They're very specific to boiling seafood. So they help with the
cooking. To boiling seafood. Okay.
Yeah. So like think like big crawfish.
Yeah, shrimp. I get it. I know that culture. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So in about a month or two, we're going to hopefully have our third product on the market, which we're really excited about. My brother's been working super hard on that product development. And so my question is, we have a small team right now of just three people. Yes. And what I'm focused on now is building out the systems and processes and generally just trying to get organized to better cope with the anticipated volume. Obviously, as you know, there's a ton that goes on behind the scenes to get a product out the door. It's like, I did not appreciate it until I started this about a year ago with my brother.
Real stuff.
Yeah, it's real stuff. And it's been a challenge, but that's something I've been impressed with is your ability to go and actually execute in the operations.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Like when everyone's like, he's a motivational speaker, he's an influencer. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm an operator.
Yeah, well that, and I honestly, that's always like when I listen to your podcast, I'm like, I wish there was more conversations about the behind the scenes operations.
You know, I'll take note of that, my friend. I really think you're right. And I think I need to, you know, T does it a little bit. Like, yeah. You know, I talk a lot about it from the HR side, right? 12 and a half has really gone there. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, and you know this, finding a way to communicate operations and content is challenging. It is meetings and decisions, meetings and decisions.
Yeah,
meetings,
it's not glamorous and at all.
Yeah, it's like, and a lot of times, like, it's like, you know, but it's just meetings and decisions. It's like, do we open another office? Yes, no. Do we innovate a new division? Yes, no. Do we put more money into analytics or strategy department? You know, like there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so I guess just to get to the actual question, I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about your experience tactically in the early days with building out processes, delegating work, and generally just being able to free yourself and set your employees up for success. Because I think that's the part where we're sort of...
Well, you're not there yet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when VaynerMedia was less than 15 people for the first 2 years, I didn't have to think about that shit. I just did everything.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you delegating to? You've got three of you.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I guess the...
Are you more talking about maximizing the efficiency of your time when there's only three of you?
I think that's more of what we're actually manufacturing all the products. Like right now, I did hire somebody in February who's been awesome, and he's helping with production on one of the product lines. I'm doing all the production on the other product line. And so it's really maximizing the efficiency. And you know, as our goal is to scale via coming up with totally new to world products. So we have patents on our current products, but we want to just keep pumping out new products.
You want to?
Yeah, we want to.
Why?
We love the, you know, truthfully,
you like
we,
it?
Love the, we love the process of inventing.
Good. Right?
And coming out with stuff.
Well, good. I mean, one thing that I like opening businesses, I like doing 100 things. One thing you have to do mentally is understand that if that's what you love, you will drop the ball.
Yeah.
If you're going to invent 17 things, like 12 things are going to get fucked. And as long as you understand that, you'll actually not stress on things that don't matter. I am a voracious entrepreneur and have a voracious need to open up companies. I have to then also understand that Vayner Live, Vayner Sampling, and many other Vayners that nobody hears about here failed. Because when you're doing 39 things, that's what's going to happen. Those divisions failed within VaynerMedia,
mm-hmm.
right? I tried to do small business stuff before, then finally Sasha worked. But, you know, somebody says focus on one product first. Susan, that works for her. That's good for Susan. That's not good for you and your brother, and you shouldn't. Because you know that you, and how do I know this? Because you said just now, in a way that landed for me, you know, we just enjoy the process of inventing. And I think people don't understand what we should all be doing out here is enjoying it more so than maximizing every dollar. There are people who love their business at 3 million a year and then think they need to grow and go to 4 million, but they had to hire this and they had to do this and now they hate it. And I'm like, why didn't you just stay at 3 and be fucking happy as fuck?
Yeah.
I don't think everything I'm doing is always going to be the best money maker or success in the short term. But if I don't live my truth and continue to innovate every day, well, then I'm not going to be happy. And then none of the businesses are going to work. VaynerMedia is successful because I do Gary V. VaynerMedia is successful because I do help my dad with his wine stuff. VaynerMedia is successful because V Friends exists. I need everything to make me happy. Thus, the things that have clicked will work. Too many people. So for you, it's hard to prioritize because you're fucking inventing so many products. But the good thing is you're actually winning because you understand that you guys love the process of inventing. And though Susan is right for herself and many others, and really even logically, right? Mm-hmm. She's not right for you two. You two would rather enjoy, and you're so damn young that you should only do the things that actually bring you the most happiness, because that will actually make you win. It's okay on paper that it doesn't work for others. The reason Buster Levine just said this is exactly what I need to hear. This is a massive common problem that most people haven't dissected the way I'm talking about it right now.
Well, and you know, I don't want to keep going too long because I know you got to get.
I want to stay here. This is important.
Yeah, I think this will help people too, because I don't think we really struggle with, you know, not judging ourselves on dropping balls. You know, I think when you talk about starting a manufacturing company, when you do come up with a product and you buy all the, you have all the overhead of machines and inventory, like, you know, you got to see that one through, right? And you have you have to see that through, and you have to create, in my opinion, systems and processes to hopefully allow that to run so you can move on to the next one. And so I think that's where we've struggled to like get organized.
You haven't struggled. Your company's too young.
Yeah.
You're creating an ideology of like, we should be here. How long has the company been existing?
It's been 3 years.
It's 5 minutes. You know, that's 5 seconds, right?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it, but I know. Yeah.
It's 5 seconds. Like you've launched two products.
Yes. We have two products out right now. And then we'll have a third coming.
And you're profitable?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you understand how fucking amazing?
Yeah.
Fuck hardly. You didn't go out of business. Most people are out of business in 3 years.
Right.
And hardly is you're fucking profitable.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
Like cool. I'm very thrilled that you're ambitious and you'd like it. We all want to be better and do better. Mm-hmm. But the good news is you're not struggling with it. You just haven't gotten to it.
Yep. Yep.
You just haven't gotten to it. You're not struggling with it. You fucking have been doing too many things. You're like successfully entrepreneuring.
Yeah, well, I'll give credit to my brother because he really started this thing from the ground up. And I think so since I graduated last year, I joined in, and now it's been, you know, how can we continue to grow and scale and free up more of our time to
work? Can I give you a huge piece of advice?
Please.
Never. Ever, ever choose money or your own pride and ego over your brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are about to go through a thing where, you know, money is binary. Some people just love it so much that they're willing to hurt their relationship with their family. And that's very challenging. It's grounded in a lot of insecurity, but it is what it is. And like, it's kind of an easy one. The second one is harder. The need to say, bro, I did that, you did this. This kind of like feeling of competitive spirit of like, no, bro, you came up with the invention, but that marketing campaign I did on TikTok, fucking, that's why. And to have the humility, the reason I successfully worked with my dad and my brother was it was the humility for me at the end of the day. As much as I was like, I'm the guy, what really at the end of the day mattered was not choosing my own feelings of need of like validation and money. Never at the end of the day, sure, in little riffs, but in real life, never choosing that over the love of my brother and dad is the greatest single business accomplishment of my life. And it's not even close.
I appreciate you saying that. Yep.
You guys are really young. You're hungry, you're ambitious, you're doing it together. This is gonna be the best years of your life. You are gonna remember these days more than anything.
Yep.
It can go sour really fast if you do not deploy that humility and choose it because you love your brother.
Got it. Yep, I appreciate it, Gary.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to have Derek.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, Derek. How are you?
Good. So I was wondering, how do you balance, you know, posting on social media to build your brand while you're still working at a company? Because most companies would view, you know, you posting on social media all day as a negative and not doing your job. So how do you kind of balance those two things?
By picking a job that has good managers and leaders that don't see it that way.
Yeah.
You know, you have to understand, businesses are just made up of people. Like, for example, we don't even have a system to watch what our people are doing. I trust my people and I want good for them. I want them to be productive, but I want them to be happy. And if it makes them happy to tweet all day in between meetings, mazel tov. My father wants to ban cell phones in the liquor store. Because if somebody checks their text for 1 second to see if their mom or if their bus is on time, my dad loses his mind. That's not my time. Two very different men, me and my dad. There's no chance you're tweeting all day with Pops. You can fucking make unlimited content with me. And that's the world. There's a bunch of Sashas. There's a bunch of Garys. If you want to do what you just said, you better work for a fucking Gary. And if you don't right now, and it means so much to you to post, well, then you should start looking for another job. If you're good, then you're good. But that is it. It is that simple.
I like it. Yeah. Cause I want to start being able to, you know, before I started listening to your content, I wasn't aware of the importance of building your brand, you know, on social media. It was more of, you know, while I'm at work, while I'm at coworkers, friends, you know, building my brand in person with people that I interact with every day. But it's more, so once I started listening to what you talk about, it's like, okay, if I do one day want to start my own business, which I do, starting to build that process, but you know, I kind of struggled with, I didn't want to do that all the time while I'm still working at, you know, a company.
Look, you also have to be respectful, right? You know, like doing the right thing is always the right thing. If you're getting paid and you're quietly like not working, we have some employees that are trying to be very clever at Vayner. And my big thing is like, A, I laugh because I'm like, do they think they're tricking me? B, you know, I just want to say to them like, hey man, like doing, hey gal, like doing the right thing is important. Like, you know, like you will lose in the end when you don't do the right things. And so I think, you know, finding the right balance on that is very important, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but on the flip side, I tell a lot of my business friends, I'm like, yo, why are you mad at that person? You're fucking emailing them at all hours of the night, right? These people are supposed to work 9 to 5, 9 to 6. Like you're fucking hitting them at 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11 and 6. Like, so like, don't be on a fucking pedestal, business owner. Like your person might've, yes, spent 7 minutes. You might be on the clock right now and here we are, fine. But what about at 8:30 when you email them and they have to do something for 15 minutes? Like people keeping score on some bullshit. Like your employees are your family.
Yep.
And as a business owner, if you don't see it that way, you've already lost.
Yeah. No, that's great. Awesome. Appreciate it, Gary.
All right. We got next, we're going to have Chase.
Gary, thanks for having me on, man. Really good to talk to you. I'm a OGV friend, been following you for a long time. Just really excited to be on. I just want to say I appreciate, truly appreciate all of the info and documentation y'all put out prior to VFriends launching back in May.
That was big, Chase. You know, if you ask me the thing I'm most proud of with VFriends, it's not even that it's done great, and it will. And like, as long as I am healthy, VFriends is going to really win because I'm a very capable entrepreneur. But the thing I'm more proud of is through that education, and we did it so hard, so heavy, months, people learned. They learned how to get a MetaMask. They learned what a seed phrase was. They learned Ethereum. Some people, while they were waiting for VFriends, minted Bored Ape because I was delayed. For 0.07, like such great things happen. People learned. I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I'm 100% in that group. I mean, honestly, if you and your team hadn't put that out, I wouldn't have jumped into your project. I bought 5 Ethereum back in 2018, put all of it into your project, and got 2 rares and a spec on the floor, and wow. Best financial move I've ever made.
Have you sold any of them?
Absolutely not. And I don't plan to for a very long time.
Wow. I'm so humbled. Good for you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. So my question is more on the personal side of things. With the countless things that you have going on in your professional life, how do you stay balanced and make sure that you're giving your wife and kids the attention that they deserve?
Communication, effort, you know, priority. Like, you know, people see so much from me, but like, I don't think they really realize they don't see anything. I'm very prolific in my content creation. Why? I allocate an hour like this, get in with my community, get these vibes going, right? This is nice. Like, this is an amazing morning. It's been a lot of good content. I'm reading the chat, feel so connected to everybody. But you know this, that fucking last thing with that kid from New Orleans, that thing is gonna be viewed a billion times. Like, I'm gonna chop the shit out of that, right?
It's huge.
And so then I'm gonna penetrate on LinkedIn for family business and on TikTok for one little part of it. And this, you know, and it feels like I did a full send podcast. You do that for an hour, but then there's like fucking ungodly amounts of content out of it. So, and I work hard and I really enjoy it, but like, there's way more hours in my life that are going on that nobody sees, nobody knows anything about. And I keep it that way. And it's kind of easy, to be honest. It's like, I don't value anything more than people that I love. And why would I not prioritize that? I don't need the outside validation of wealth creation or headlines or positive reinforcement from social media. It's all lovely. It's all a byproduct. What I need is to spend time with the people I love, and I need to do the thing I love. And the thing I love to do is be an entrepreneur. But I was loving this shit at 26 at Wine Library, working for my dad. The same exact way I feel right now, I felt at 28. The same, because for me, it's just playing tennis, right? For me, business is sports. For me at 28, I was playing tennis. For me at 46, I'm playing tennis. Now I'm better at tennis. People know who I am now. I'm more of like a famous tennis player. But at the end of the day, I don't need the selfies in the streets. I don't need people leaving a goat emoji. It's also why I'm comfortable when people are like, you fucking suck, you're full of shit. Because I don't need the good, I don't need the bad. And I'm just kind of in my zone, and I'm just playing tennis out here, right? And so because those are the only two things I focus on, it's actually very easy to balance, because I think when you do need the accolades, when you do need the $1 million to buy a Mercedes to show them, I'm going to show you that I'm successful, I'm insecure, I'm going to show you, then you start losing track of your time with the people you love, because you're obsessed with the negativeness of the game.
100%. Totally agree. Thank you. I appreciate the alpha. Really looking forward to meeting you in person at VCon in May.
I think VCon is gonna be one of the greatest weekends of my life. I am so obsessed with meeting every single person. We are like, back to operations. We are in countless meetings, tracking how we're gonna do the panels, how we're gonna do the keynotes. I'm like trying to figure out, like, I need to do like a selfie booth. It's like a kissing booth, but like, that's how I can get a lot of people, but we can't interrupt with that keynote. So when are we, like, it's real shit out here for me.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of moving parts, but it's going to be an epic week and weekend. And
the best part is I don't even feel like I need to be kind of Mickey Mouse or Walt Disney. I think the community is so fucking fired up to see each other. Like, I can't, it's going to be like summer camp, right? Like, especially VCon 2, VCon 3, like, people are family.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
Sharing the same rarity type or sharing the same character. It's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. The community that's being built is insane. I mean, there's so many of us that hop on a Clubhouse channel every morning or afternoon or evening, and
it's the best.
So many things coming from it, man. It's the relationships in themselves are well worth the ticket.
I agree. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Next, we're going to have on Osman. Osman, sorry if I pronounced that wrong.
Hey, Gary, how's it going?
Osman, how are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. You got my name right. Thank you for that.
Of course. I know some Osmans.
So I'm from Toronto, Canada. I have a small recycling
company. By the way, literally said it last night over dinner. I think my favorite city besides New York City.
There we go. You know, I saw that St. Louis, Toronto NFT. I'm pretty sure Recon's coming here soon.
There's a reason that St. Louis and Toronto is an NFT in
Gary, for my question, I have a small recycling brokerage. We sell and export paper and plastics. So right now I'm the first sales guy. I'm doing everything. And my question was, how do I bring on the first employee number one to do more sales, because it's a brokerage, and allow that person to also help the business, but also grow themselves? Because it's not like you have a culture yet. It's employee number one.
There's some people that don't need all that in place. There's a lot of people that grow more by being employee 1, 2, 7, 9, and 15. Then every employee that was in the first 100 employees at Vayner had more growth than every employee that comes into Vayner today, even though I have systems that I'm so proud of, because you're in the trenches early, you're learning through osmosis.
Okay, fair, I get that. But now in a brokerage environment, because I guess in Vayner, there's projects, right? They're sort of working on this project, working on this thing.
It's different.
But in a brokerage, where it's like they're going to be actively looking for sales and looking for clients, we're not necessarily working together, we're working independently.
That's right.
So is it the same thing? Just allow them to just grow themselves?
Of course. Well, no. I mean, look, sales, yes and no. Sales is real life. There's no hiding. So that's why I love it so much. You can't make pretend in sales.
Okay.
Right? It is what it is. So of course, one of the ways to grow is to let them sink and swim. Of course. But the osmosis comes in different ways. You're going to be interacting with them as you're going to be talking to them.
Of course.
And so you're going to be analyzing. They'll be talking, you'll be thinking, and you say, hey, but maybe you want to try to start with this on the opening sentence. Or did you tell them about that? Or hey, did you follow up and have an in-person? Or whatever it might be. So you're doing both. It's like raising a capable child. A capable child needs both. Right now there's so many people that are over-parenting their kids and putting them into a bubble, making all their decisions, taking care of everything for them. Of course they can't do shit at 22, right?
Fair enough.
Same with sales. You've got to create a framework and be a support system, but you can't you got to let them live. You've got to let them win and lose on their own sales ability. I think the thing you look for when you hire the first person is, have they lived in that environment? I would hire somebody who's already been on a sales team where they were one of just two or three people because they've tasted it already.
Or
you go with your gut intuition and you can see the fucking flame in her or his eyes and you give him an at bat. Sink and swim.
Sink and swim. God, I love that.
Sink or swim, but you don't actually let them sink. You jump in the pool and save them. But you can't teach your kid swimming by just holding them the whole time. And you can't teach sales without letting them do it.
Sink or swim, got it. Appreciate that. And once again, Gary, I think some guys mentioned before, OG, Weed Friend owner, thank you for educating the community. 2020 is a bad year for, I think, everybody. But I think buying in too early, I think I'm now six figures up. So appreciate that. Gonna be at VCon Minneapolis, can't wait. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Osman.
And finally, we have Charles.
Oh my God.
Nice hat, Charles.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good morning, Gary.
Morning.
Sorry, I'm kind of freaking out.
Nothing to freak out about.
But before I ask my question, I just want to give a huge, huge shout out to the VFriends community. Like so many of others have said today, I'm one more example of one of the success stories that's come out of the VFriends drop. And
that's nice.
You know, I've followed your content for since about 2018, and yeah, I can definitely say I'm one of those people who's had their lives completely fundamentally changed from your content, and just a huge thank you to you. And
thank you, Charles. It means a lot to me.
Anyway, so for my question, I'm kind of currently living through my 37 things, you know. I've been kind of in business for myself since before COVID, and just done it through 100 different, you know, selling products, flipping this, that, you know, and definitely was able to get a huge win off of the VFriends. I own two. One of them was actually gifted to me, a very rare Driven Dragon,
wow,
which I'm still like in shock that that ever happened. But my question is, some of the best communication practices to implement more kind candor into your day-to-day interactions, especially in business and professionally, like how do you...
You know, I struggled with this my whole life. I talked about in the book, I was not good at candor. I was not good at saying, hey, Susan, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Then I put the word kind in front of it, and it made it easier for me. I think for all of us that struggle with candor, the reality is we have to find a way for us to be comfortable with professional, kind, appropriate confrontation. You know, like, we're avoiding confrontation either in our own insecurities, or for me, it was actually, and I don't love this, but it's true, I had a level of ego, which I'm really proud of, that I'm mainly confidence and not ego. But as I broke it down and really worked through it, I realized that I thought this person wasn't good at their job. Because my issue with candor has always been employees, nobody else, because I love them so much. I'm in family life. And I took this weird tack that, okay, now I know they're not great, but they're not great. So out there in the real world, they're gonna really do bad. So they're better off with me. And it was almost like this, you know, really like very, it seemed like a good thing, but it was like built in my own ego, like that I would be a better home for them than somewhere else. And it led to, over 20 years, the only relationships that I have that are not positive are the ones that I wasn't able to deploy enough candor to, and then would surprise them when we would fire them. And it's really unfortunate, something I regret, and it's something I've been really working hard on. And it's been going a lot better for me, Charles, in the last 2 years. And what I could tell you is, for me, it was when I decided it was kind candor. And with that, all of a sudden, I could really just get there. And I just realized I was ready at 44 to get there. And so for you, you just have to figure out how you can get there to actually tell somebody what you actually think.
Yeah. I have to say, like, especially in business, some, you know, I've started many different projects since I've turned 20. And I've always ended up doing
Excuse me for friends. 1 second. Excuse me for 1 second. Oh, I love where you're about to go. Robin says kind candor equals constructive criticism. Yes, but I think constructive criticism, what I try to tell people is, like, the word criticism in itself is already, like, you know, like, when you leave somebody with candor, like, you know, when you leave candor, a lot of people go with fear. They're scared when you're done talking, and they're looking for a new job, or they're crying at home. Like, you know, you've got to find a way to be able to make somebody feel good, or at least neutral, while understanding. And the problem is, when people hear constructive criticism, they hear the criticism part. And, like, I don't think people know how to deliver feedback a lot. And that's why the word kind, I think, really lands, because kind is very distinct. Kind, candor, it's kind. Like, but it's candor. And I really, you know, back to your point, and I had this too, when you're starting things with friends and family, it's really hard to tell them the truth. Like, yeah, I become like family with my employees, but I've had family and friends, and sometimes...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually in the process of starting a business with my girlfriend right now. So it's like,
it's similar to
the top thing on my mind. So.
I think you over-communicate now. Hey, baby, I'm really worried about this shit. We're going into this. Know me. This is, be vulnerable, be naked. you know, she's already seen you naked, so you're good. You know, like be naked, right? Like I'm very worried about this. I'm not good at this per se, and you're my girl. I'm gonna probably start getting resentment. Then I may crack. And like, you know, you gotta really talk about it up front so that she knows what's happening as well. But then, like I said to the younger brother combo earlier, just love her more than the business.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I just want to give a couple of specific shout outs to the V friends. Shout out Corso, shout out Post, shout out Brick, shout out Kelly, shout out Kali Bud, shout out Josh, and shout out NFT Jack. They've been my homies since like day one.
That's awesome.
And the V friends. And anyway, I really appreciate it.
Love you, bud. Wrapping up. See you.
Love you too, man. See you,
Dustin. I'll see you there. Thank you, my friend. Good job, Dust. You guys found a lot of good peeps.
That was all Seth.
Seth, big shout out to you, brother. I don't know if you're behind the scenes right now or not, but big, big shout out. I hope everybody's super well. I see all of you in the comments. I love you very much. Thank you for watching the show. Tea with Gary V is back. We'll try to do it as much as I can. Full disclosure, I am deep in Series 2 V Friends right now. Dustin's even shaking his head because he's on such a key part of my content team. He knows I'm not even posting content to my normal volume. I'm deeply deep in the cocoon right now. And I really, really, really just am so grateful for this community. I hope everybody's super well. I wish you nothing but the best. I love you. Go love yourself. We'll see you next time.